You are now listening to the OrthoBullets podcast.
This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will be a question session reviewing multiple choice questions related to thromboembolism and anticoagulation, which are two topics that we covered this past week on the podcast. So let's get right into it. We'll start with thromboembolism. And the first question reads, an otherwise healthy 65-year-old male undergoes a right total knee arthroplasty without complications. Which of the following statements is recommended by the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons Clinical Practice Guidelines for preventing venous thromboembolic disease in patients undergoing elective hip and knee arthroplasty? And the choices are 1. Administer aspirin 1 week preoperatively. 2. Use elastic compressive stockings for 10 days preoperatively. 3. Obtain a postoperative duplex ultrasound of the patient for screening purposes. 4. Administer Coumadin to maintain the patient's INR between 1.5 and 2.5 during the postoperative period. And 5. Use mechanical compressive devices in the postoperative period. So use of mechanical compressive devices and aspirin during the postoperative period is recommended by the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons Clinical Practice Guidelines. So the correct answer to this question is 5. Use mechanical compressive devices in the postoperative period. In 2011, the AAOS published their clinical practice guidelines for preventing venous thromboembolic disease in patients undergoing elective hip and knee arthroplasty. A summary of those guidelines provide general recommendations for venous thromboembolic disease in patients with and without bleeding disorders. These recommendations range from strong to moderate to inconclusive. Additionally, there are recommendations based on consensus agreement of the authors, like the recommendation of early mobilization in the postoperative period. These guidelines are now much closer in agreement with the American College of Chest Surgeons, ACCS, 2012 guidelines for VTE prophylaxis. One of the differences between the guidelines is that the AAOS guidelines do not state a specific amount of time that a pharmacologic agent should be given postoperatively, while the ACCS recommends such agents for a minimum of 10 to 14 days. Moving on to the next question. A 70-year-old woman with a body mass index of 34 and a history of hypercholesterolemia has elected to undergo total hip arthroplasty. Her son recently learned that he has factor V Leiden following an episode of pulmonary embolism. What are the patient's risk factors for thromboembolic disease? And the choices are 1. Type of surgery, age and BMI. 2. Type of surgery, hypercholesterolemia and age. 3. Age, BMI and hypercholesterolemia. And 4. BMI, type of surgery, and hypercholesterolemia. So risk stratification is one of the most critical clinical evaluations before undergoing total joint arthroplasty. Many factors have been identified to increase risk for venous thromboembolism. The major factors include previous VTE, obesity, type of surgery, such as total joint arthroplasty, hypercoagulable states, myocardial infarction, congestive heart failure, family history of VTE, and hormonal replacement therapy. Hypercholesterolemia is not a risk factor for thromboembolic disease. So the correct answer to this question is 1. Type of surgery, age, and BMI are this patient's risk factors for thromboembolic disease. Moving on to the next question, a 25-year-old patient has a blood clotting disorder. In this disorder, the variant cofactor cannot be inactivated, causing overproduction of thrombin. What is this patient's clotting disorder? And the choices are 1. Protein S deficiency, 2. Glanzmann's thrombasthenia, 3. Factor V Leiden thrombophilia, 4. Antiphospholipid antibody syndrome, and 5. Von Willebrand's disease. So this patient has Factor V Leiden thrombophilia, making 3 the correct answer. Normal Factor V serves as a cofactor to Factor 10A, and together they produce thrombin and drive coagulation. Protein C helps regulate this process by inhibiting factor V to prevent hypercoagulability. The altered factor V in factor V Leiden cannot be inhibited by protein C, and thus a hypercoagulable state results. Bertina et al. Were the first to report a mutation in blood coagulation factor V and the associated resistance to activated protein C. In addition, they found that 5% of healthy individuals show activated protein C resistance, which is associated with a 7-fold increase in the risk for deep venous thrombosis. Vosmer et al. Reviewed coagulation abnormalities in leg calve Perthes disease. They showed an increased incidence of the factor V Leiden mutations, in patients with leg calvae Perthes disease with an odds ratio of 3.3 with a 95% confidence interval between 1.6 to 6.7. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, protein S deficiency acts as a non-enzymatic cofactor to activated protein C. Deficiency results in the inability to activate protein C, causing overproduction of thrombin. Answer 2, Glanzmann thrombocythemia is a rare genetic platelet disorder in which the platelets have qualitative or quantitative deficiencies causing increased bleeding. Answer 4, antiphospholipid syndrome is an autoimmune disease. These antibodies react against proteins that bind to phospholipids. Hypercoagulation is thought to be related to antibodies against protein C and possibly protein S. And answer 5, von Willebrand's disease is a genetic bleeding disorder caused by missing or defective von Willebrand factor, which is a clotting protein. Moving on to the next question, a deficiency of which of the following is associated with an increased risk of venous thromboembolism? And the choices are 1, fibrinogen, 2, protein S, 3, factor 7, 4, factor 8, and 5, prothrombin. So protein C and protein S are endogenous proteins whose action is to inhibit the coagulation cascade. Deficiencies in these proteins are a risk factor for the development of thrombus. Prothrombin is the precursor to thrombin, which is the final common pathway for both the intrinsic and extrinsic coagulation cascade. Thrombin acts to convert fibrinogen to fibrin and thus clot formation. So the correct answer to this question is 2, protein S. Moving on to the next question, deep venous thromboses are primarily composed of red blood cells and fibrin. What is fibrin? And the choices are 1, platelet cytoskeletons, 2, fragmented collagen, 3, a type of thromboplastin, 4, a product of the coagulation cascade, and 5, a product of the fibrinolytic system. So fibrin is the end product of the coagulation cascade that results from the cleavage of fibrinogen by thrombin, aka factor 2A. Platelets are a key component in arterial thrombosis. Collagen initiates the intrinsic arm of the coagulation cascade. Thromboplastin is a procoagulant substance that triggers the extrinsic arm of the coagulation cascade. The fibrinolytic system is the regulatory pathway that breaks down cross-linked fibrin. But the correct answer to this question is 4, fibrin is a product of the coagulation cascade. Moving on to the next question, which of the following prophylactic regimens for the prevention of deep venous thrombosis after knee arthroplasty has received a grade 1A recommendation in favor of its use from the American College of Chest Physicians in the 2004 guidelines? And the choices are 1, warfarin with a targeted INR of 2.0 to 3.0 for 10 to 14 days. 2, low molecular weight heparin used for at least 3 days. 3, pneumatic compression sleeves used while the patient is in the hospital. 4, fondaparinux used for 5 to 7 days. And 5, aspirin for 4 weeks. So in the 2004 ACCP guidelines, there were 3 prophylactic regimens that received a grade 1A that is a favorable recommendation. These included low molecular weight heparin, warfarin, or fondaparinux, as long as they were used for at least 10 days. If warfarin is used, the target INR should be 2 to 3, according to the guidelines. Pneumatic compression sleeves have gained popularity in the orthopedic community, but have not received a grade 1A rating from the ACCP at this time. Use of aspirin by itself is discouraged by the ACCP. So the correct answer to this question is 1, warfarin with a targeted INR of 2.0 to 3.0 for 10 to 14 days has received a grade 1A recommendation in favor of its use from the American College of Chest Physicians. Moving on to the next question, a 67-year-old man complains of low-grade fevers and calf pain 2 weeks following a total knee arthroplasty. What is the next appropriate step in management of this patient? And the choices are 1, plethysmography of the lower extremity, 2, MRI of the lower extremity, 3, CT angiography of the lower extremity, 4, venous ultrasonography, and 5, knee aspiration to evaluate for a septic joint. So venous ultrasonography is the next best step in this patient's management due to the clinical picture of a deep venous thrombosis. The most sensitive and specific recommended diagnostic procedure is a venous ultrasound. So the correct answer to this question is 4, venous ultrasonography. in their multi-center study, Hout et al. Hypothesized that admission to trauma centers that use duplex ultrasound more frequently would independently predict increased DVT reporting for individual patients. They indeed found the trauma center's ultrasound practice was an independent predictor of DVT diagnosis for individual patients, controlling for patient-level risk factors, but concluded the elevated DVT rates at these centers were due to surveillance bias. As such, they recommend that surveillance for DVT should not be considered as a quality control measure in the care of trauma patients. Moving on to the next question, which of the following is not a component of Virchow's triad? And the choices are 1, thrombocytopenia, 2, platelet dysfunction, 3, hypercoagulability, 4, venous stasis, and 5, neither thrombocytopenia nor platelet dysfunction are components of Virchow's triad. So Virchow's triad of veno-thromboembolic disease is composed of endothelial injury, venous stasis, and hypercoagulability. These factors increase the risk of a deep venous thrombosis and can lead to embolic events such as pulmonary embolus. Prophylaxis of thromboembolic disease is a controversial issue in orthopedic surgery. Currently, prophylactic treatment recommendations are based on risk stratification that weighs the risk of thromboembolism versus the bleeding risk. Salvati et al. Reviews the recent advances and recommendations for preventing, diagnosing, and treating thromboembolism. Recently, the treatment recommendations have been updated by Haas et al., again weighing the risks of clot versus bleeding. But the correct answer to this question is 5, neither thrombocytopenia nor platelet dysfunction are components of Virchow's triad. Moving on to the next question. The 2009 AAOS Clinical Guideline on Prevention of Pulmonary Embolism in Patients Undergoing Total Hip or Knee Arthroplasty recommends classifying patients as having either a standard or elevated risk of bleeding complications. The presence of all of the following qualify a patient as having an elevated risk of major bleeding except, and the choices are 1, history of hemophilia, 2, history of protein C deficiency, 3, history of a recent gastrointestinal bleed, 4, history of a recent hemorrhagic stroke, and 5, history of von Willebrand's disease. So the 2009 AAOS Clinical Guideline on Prevention of Pulmonary Embolism in Patients Undergoing Total Hip or Knee Arthroplasty recommends that all patients preoperatively should be classified as either having an elevated or standard risk of bleeding and either an elevated or standard risk of pulmonary embolism. A history of a bleeding disorder like hemophilia and von Willebrand's disease, recent GI bleed or hemorrhagic stroke qualifies a patient as having an elevated risk of major bleeding. A history of hypercoagulable state, such as protein C deficiency or previous documented pulmonary embolism, qualifies a patient as having an elevated risk of pulmonary embolism. Type of thromboembolism prophylaxis is recommended by weighing the risk of major bleeding versus the risk of a pulmonary embolism. For those patients with a known contraindication to anticoagulation, an IVC filter is considered. Mechanical prophylaxis is recommended across all low to high risk of either bleeding or pulmonary embolism groups undergoing total hip or total knee arthroplasty. But the correct answer to this question is 2, history of protein C deficiency will not qualify a patient as having an elevated risk of major bleeding as it is a hypercoagulable state. Moving on to the next question, a 52-year-old male underwent a right total knee arthroplasty 3 days ago and reports new onset dyspnea. His vital signs include a temperature of 98.8, pulse of 133, blood pressure of 130 over 77, respiratory rate of 28, and oxygen saturation of 91% on room air. A chest radiograph shows atelectasis. Which of the following findings is most likely also present? And the choices are 1, hyperchloremic metabolic acidosis, 2, jugular venous distension with tracheal deviation, 3, EKG demonstrating S wave in lead 1, Q wave in lead 3, and T wave inversion in lead 3, 4, pleural effusion with pleural slash serum protein greater than 0.5 and pleural slash serum LDH greater than 0.6, and 5, increased carbon monoxide diffusing capacity or DLCO. So the patient's clinical presentation is consistent with a pulmonary embolism and an EKG demonstrating S wave in lead 1, Q wave in lead 3, and T wave inversion in lead 3 is most likely associated with this diagnosis, making 3 the correct answer to this question. The most commonly seen signs in the EKG associated with pulmonary embolism are sinus tachycardia, right axis deviation, and right bundle branch block. Sinus tachycardia is, however, only found in 8 to 69% of people with pulmonary embolism. The S1Q3T3 pattern that we just discussed is from acute right heart strain and is termed the McGinn-White sign, but is only found in about 10 to 20% of people with a pulmonary embolus. Patients undergoing total knee arthroplasty without DVT prophylaxis have symptomatic pulmonary embolism at a rate of approximately 8%. Patients undergoing TKA have a higher risk for the presence of DVT, but are at a lower risk for symptomatic PE than patients undergoing total hip arthroplasty. Stein et al. Present a study that found that dyspnea or tachypnea occurred in 92% of patients diagnosed with a pulmonary embolism. They also report that dyspnea or tachypnea was less commonly encountered in elderly patients with no previous history of cardiopulmonary disease. Moving on to the next question, during total hip arthroplasty, which of the following interventions increases the risk of pulmonary ventilation perfusion mismatch the greatest? And the choices are 1. Acetabular reaming, 2. Cement pressurization of the femoral canal, 3. Use of a modular femoral stem, 4. Intraoperative sequential compressive device on the non-operative leg, and 5. Posterior approach. So cement pressurization of the femoral canal increases methyl methacrylate and fat emboli into the venous system that can travel to the lungs. So the correct answer to this question is 2, cement pressurization of the femoral canal. El-Margi et al. Examined the roles of methyl methacrylate monomer and cementing technique in the formation and hemodynamic outcome of pulmonary fat emboli in an animal model. Embolic particles were detected in femoral vein samples when cement pressurization was used. Intramedullary lavage before cementing had no significant effect on the embolic particle level. Hemodynamic evidence of pulmonary embolism was noted with reaming and intramedullary canal preparation. Pellegrini et al. Reviewed more than 1,000 cases of THA to evaluate the efficacy of postoperative venograms to diagnose DVT. Greater than 20% of patients had evidence of DVT, although few of these were symptomatic. The author suggested that postoperative venogram may be useful to shorten the time period of DVT chemoprophylaxis following THA. Moving on to the next question, a 25-year-old healthy male is scheduled to undergo a 9-level posterior spinal fusion for scoliosis. Administering preoperative recombinant erythropoietin would place the patient at increased risk of developing which of the following complications? And the choices are 1. Acute renal failure, 2. Increased bleeding time, 3. Thrombotic event, 4. Wound complications, and 5. Delayed spinal fusion. So the use of recombinant erythropoietin or EPO preoperatively for patients undergoing major elective orthopedic surgery has been associated with a higher incidence of deep venous thrombosis. So the correct answer to this question is 3, a thrombotic event is what this patient would be at increased risk for. Johnson et al. Present a level 5 review of recombinant erythropoietin. When hypoxia in the body is detected, the kidney is stimulated to produce EPO in the renal cortical interstitial cells. EPO interacts with progenitor stem cells in the bone marrow to increase red blood cell production. The use of erythropoietin does decrease transfusion rates, but has no effect on renal function, bleeding times, wound complications, or bony healing. The Level 1 study by Barris et al. Studied the use of recombinant human erythropoietin as an adjuvant treatment to autologous blood transfusions in elective surgery. They report a 10% DVT rate with the use of 300 units per kilogram of recombinant erythropoietin dosage versus placebo, which had a 5% rate. And the final question for this topic, a 65-year-old man undergoes total knee replacement and is found to have deep venous thrombosis 2 days later. What molecule is thought to be involved in this process when it is released during surgical dissection? And the choices are 1. Prothrombin, 2. Rank L, 3. IL-1B, 4. Thromboplastin, and 5. Factor 11. So thromboplastin is also known more commonly as tissue factor, which is involved in the extrinsic pathology of the coagulation cascade. So the correct answer to this question is 4. Thromboplastin. During surgical dissection, insults occur to the endothelial walls of blood vessels. There are 3 ways in which the body reacts to form a clot so that the patient does not bleed excessively. 1 is via vessel contraction, another is by collagen release, and a third is by tissue thromboplastin release. Thromboplastin release is part of the extrinsic coagulation pathway, as we just discussed. Thromboplastin release activates factor 7, which activates factor 10, which converts prothrombin to thrombin. Thrombin is the catalyst for converting fibrinogen to fibrin, which induces clot formation. While this is useful for decreasing bleeding, it is the same mechanism by which a DVT develops. Moving on to the next topic of anticoagulation, the first question reads, all of the following have been associated with increased postoperative bleeding due to their direct effect on platelet function, except, and the choices are 1. St. John's wort, 2. Aged garlic extracts, 3. Aspirin, 4. Ginseng, and 5. Ginkgo biloba. So all of the following listed have been associated with increased postoperative bleeding due to their direct effect on platelet function, except St. John's wort, which exerts its effect on the central nervous system by inhibiting serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine reuptake by neurons. Ginkgo biloba, ginseng, and garlic are all herbal remedies that have been associated with increased postoperative bleeding and related complications. All three are known to act directly on platelet function. Physicians should be aware not only of prescribed medications, but also alternative nutraceuticals, herbal medications, and dietary supplements that are used by the patient. Ang Lee et al. Review common herbal medications and their physiologic effects. They emphasize during the preoperative evaluation, physicians should explicitly elicit and document a history of herbal medication use. Physicians should be familiar with the potential perioperative effects of the commonly used herbal medications to prevent, recognize, and treat potentially serious problems associated with their use and discontinuation. Bebington et al. Report on persistent postoperative bleeding after total hip arthroplasty secondary to ginkgo biloba usage. They found the postoperative bleeding stopped 6 weeks after the ginkgo biloba usage was discontinued. So to quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 2, aged garlic extracts inhibit platelet aggregation by increasing cyclic nucleotides and inhibiting fibrinogen binding and platelet shape change. Answer 3, aspirin inhibits coagulation by inhibiting the production of prostaglandins and thromboxanes through irreversible inactivation of the cyclooxygenase enzyme. Answer 4, ginseng works through antiplatelet activity of pinoxazole, a constituent of ginseng. And 5, ginkgo biloba is a popular nutraceutical for patients who have early dementia, intermittent claudication, secondary to peripheral vascular disease, vertigo, and tinnitus. It is reported to improve mental alertness and cognitive deficiency. It has antiplatelet properties as a result of one of its components, ginkgolide B, which displaces platelet-activating factor from its receptor binding site. Moving on to the next question, which drug works by preventing gamma-carboxylation in factor 10, factor 9, and prothrombin? And the choices are 1, warfarin, 2, heparin, 3, aspirin, 4, clopidogrel, and 5, enoxaparin. So warfarin inhibits the synthesis of vitamin K-dependent coagulation factors 2, 7, 9, and 10, as well as anticoagulant proteins C and S. Warfarin inhibits the C1 subunit of the vitamin K23 epoxide reductase, or VKORC1, enzyme. This results in depletion of the reduced form of vitamin K, also known as vitamin KH2, and limits the gamma carboxylation of the vitamin K-dependent coagulant proteins. Warfarin requires monitoring of INR to ensure therapeutic dosage with a target level of between 2 and 3. Reversal of warfarin may be achieved with vitamin K, which takes up to 3 days, or fresh frozen plasma, which acts immediately. So to quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 2, heparin binds and enhances the ability of antithrombin 3 to inhibit factors 2A, 3, and 10A. Answer 3 is incorrect, as aspirin inhibits the production of prostaglandins and thromboxanes through irreversible inactivation of the cyclooxygenase enzyme. Answer 4 is incorrect, as clopidogrel acts by inhibiting the ADP receptor on platelet cell membranes, which is important in activation of platelets and eventual cross-linking. And answer 5 is incorrect, as enoxaparin enhances the ability of antithrombin 3 to inhibit factors 2A, also known as thrombin, and factor 10A. So once again, the correct answer to this question is warfarin prevents gamma carboxylation in factors 10, factor 9, and prothrombin. Moving on to the next question, which of the following treatment regimens for thromboembolic prophylaxis meets the American College of Chest Physicians guidelines for 10-day treatment after total hip arthroplasty and total knee arthroplasty. And the choices are 1, low molecular weight heparin, 2, adjusted dose unfractionated heparin, 3, aspirin, 4, warfarin with an INR of between 1.5 to 2.0, and 5, elastic compressive stockings. So only 3 thromboembolic treatment protocols have reached grade 1A status for the American College of Chest Physician guidelines for thromboembolic prophylaxis after total hip arthroplasty and total knee arthroplasty. A patient undergoing joint arthroplasty is put on a drug that competitively inhibits the activation of an enzyme that breaks down factor 1A. The drug is 1, dabigatran, 2, tranexamic acid, 3, rivaroxaban, 4, fondaparinux, and 5, heparin. So factor 1A is fibrin. The enzyme that breaks down fibrin is plasmin. Tranexamic acid, or TXA, is an antifibrinolytic that prevents the activation of plasmin from the inactive zymogen, plasminogen. Tranexamic acid competitively inhibits the activation of plasminogen to plasmin by binding to specific sites on both plasminogen and plasmin. Tranexamic acid has roughly 8 times the antifibrinolytic activity of an older analog, E-aminocaproic acid. It is used during joint replacement surgery to reduce blood loss and the need for transfusion. Watts et al. Review strategies for minimizing blood loss and transfusion. They recommend 1 gram of TXA prior to incision and 1 gram at wound closure. They also recommend giving fluids for symptoms of anemia rather than transfusion, as even high-risk patients do well with sufficient intravascular volume, even with low hemoglobin levels. MI et al. Evaluated TXA in 107 patients undergoing THA. They found that intraoperative blood loss after preoperative TXA administration was lower than both control and postoperative TXA administration groups. They recommend using 1 gram of TXA 10 minutes before surgery and 6 hours after the first administration to best reduce blood loss during THA. Gillette et al. Retrospectively reviewed 2,046 patients receiving TXA for THA or TKA together with either aspirin, warfarin, or dalteparin. They found that the rates of symptomatic DVT were 0.35%, 0.15%, and 0.52% respectively, and non-fatal PE were similar with 0.17, 0.43, and 0.26% respectively for the 3 drugs of aspirin, warfarin, or dalteparin respectively. They recommended TXA to decrease blood loss and transfusion. Again, to quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, dabigatran is incorrect as it is an oral direct thrombin inhibitor. Answer 3, rivaroxaban is an oral direct factor 10A inhibitor, and it is FDA approved for hip and joint arthroplasty DVT prophylaxis. Answer 4, fondaparinux is incorrect as it is an indirect factor 10A inhibitor that works through antithrombin 3, and unlike heparin, it is selective for factor 10 and does not have an effect on thrombin. And answer 5, heparin is an anticoagulant that binds and activates antithrombin 3. Activated antithrombin 3 then inactivates thrombin and factor 10A. Moving on to the next question. Which of the following medications used for thromboprophylaxis following orthopedic surgery is a direct inhibitor of factor 10A? And the choices are dextran, rivaroxaban or Xarelto, Coumadin, fondaparinux or Arixtra, and aspirin. So rivaroxaban or Xarelto is an oral anticoagulant and is a direct inhibitor of factor 10A. A good way to remember this is that the XA in Xarelto, or the XA found within the spelling of the generic rivaroxaban, is a clue that these oral anticoagulants are direct inhibitors of factor 10A or XA. Rivaroxaban is a member of a new class of oral direct antithrombin-independent factor 10A inhibitors, which restrict thrombin generation both in vitro and in vivo. Inhibition of factor 10A interrupts the intrinsic and extrinsic pathway of the blood coagulation cascade, inhibiting both thrombin formation and development of thrombi. Erickson et al. Compare rivaroxaban to enoxaparin for the prevention of symptomatic venous embolism following total hip arthroplasty. Major venous thromboembolism occurred in 4 of 1,686 patients, that is 0.2%, in the rivaroxaban group and in 33 of 1,678 patients, or 2.0%, in the enoxaparin group. Additionally, major bleeding events were similar between the two groups. Moving on to the next question. Low molecular weight heparin has been shown to have an increased rate of which of the following when compared to aspirin, clopidogrel, and compression devices. And the choices are 1. Pneumonia, 2. Fatal pulmonary embolism, 3. Inferior vena cava filter placement, 4. Renal failure, and 5. Postoperative hematoma. So usage of low molecular weight heparins have been shown to have an increased rate of postoperative hematoma and wound complications in several large studies. So the correct answer to this question is 5, postoperative hematoma. The study by Dorr et al. Noted that wound complications and hematomas only existed in warfarin or low molecular weight heparin patients and not in patients treated with aspirin, clopidogrel, or compression devices. The reference study by Lee et al. Reviews the complication of retroperitoneal hematoma during low molecular weight heparin usage. Moving on to the next question. All of the following are AAOS recommendations regarding prevention of venous thromboembolic disease in patients undergoing elective hip and knee arthroplasty except. And the choices are 1. Patients should discontinue antiplatelet agents before undergoing elective hip or knee arthroplasty. 2. Aspirin is not approved as a preventative medication for venous thromboembolic disease in low-risk patients. 3. Neuraxial anesthesia like epidural, spinal, and intrathecal is recommended when possible. 4. Routine postoperative duplex ultrasonography screening is not recommended. And 5. Mechanical prophylaxis mechanisms are recommended in patients with a known bleeding disorder. So the AAOS clinical guideline on preventing pulmonary embolism in arthroplasty patients include aspirin as a thromboembolism prevention modality. Therefore, the statement aspirin is not approved as a preventative medication for venothromboembolic disease in low-risk patients is false. Mont et al. Discussed the 10 recommendations in the AAOS clinical practice guideline. The OrthoBullets interpretation of their recommendation is as follows. 1. Postoperative screening ultrasonography is not indicated. 2. Previous venous thromboembolism is the only risk factor for thromboembolism clearly supported by evidence. 3. Known bleeding disorders and active liver disease are the only risk factor for bleeding clearly supported by the evidence. 4. Patients should discontinue antiplatelet agents like aspirin and clopidogrel preoperatively. 5. All patients should get pharmacologic agents and/or mechanical compressive devices for prophylaxis. 6. Patients with previous venous thromboembolism should receive pharmacologic prophylaxis and mechanical compressive devices. 7. Patients with a known bleeding disorder and/or active liver disease should use mechanical compressive prophylaxis. 8. Patient should be mobilized early. 9. Intrathecal, epidural, and spinal anesthesia should be used. And 10. IVC filters are not clearly supported by the literature in patients who also have a contraindication to chemoprophylaxis and/or known residual venous thromboembolic disease. Moving on to the next question. Protamine functions to reverse the pharmacologic effects of which of the following anticoagulants? And the choices are 1. Aspirin, 2. Clopidogrel or Plavix, 3. Low molecular weight heparin, 4. Warfarin, and 5. Hirudin. So protamine functions to partially reverse the pharmacologic effects of low molecular weight heparin, making the correct answer 3. Protamine may help to stop bleeding related to low molecular weight heparin, although anti-factor 10A activity is not fully normalized by protamine. Vitamin K reverses the pharmacologic effect of warfarin. As aspirin and clopidogrel function directly at the level of the platelet, there is no medical method to reverse these effects, and hirudin is a naturally occurring enzyme with anticoagulant property in the salivary glands of leeches. And the final question for this topic, what is the plasma half-life of warfarin? And the choices are 1, 1 to 2 hours, 2, 4 to 6 hours, 3, 12 to 18 hours, and 4, 36 to 42 hours. So warfarin, which is dosed daily, can take 72 to 96 hours to reach therapeutic levels. It has a plasma half-life of 36 to 42 hours, making 4 the correct answer. Low molecular weight heparins have a plasma half-life of 4 to 5 hours, and fondaparinux has a half-life of 17 to 21 hours. Warfarin will not affect the INR until 2 to 3 days after it is given. Patients on chronic warfarin therapy should have treatment stopped 3 to 5 days before elective surgery to allow the INR to normalize. That's all for this question review session about thromboembolism and anticoagulation. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.